It would take a whole week, so I appreciate him doing that for us. The last time I was here to teach, we talked about Philip, and we finished up talking about Philip, and we're going to move on to three other apostles, but we're going to talk about Philip's partner. If you remember, all the apostles were grouped together in twos, or at least it appears they were grouped together in twos, and there's some historical evidence for the apostles working some in pairs, and it appears as though Philip was partnered with someone, and for the most part, it seems like they were pretty good friends and spent their lives together. I don't remember who Philip's partner happened to be. It was Bartholomew. Yeah. So Philip and Bartholomew were. It seems as though they were paired together, and there's at least some historical evidence to say that maybe after the New Testament was written that Philip and Bartholomew traveled together. So hopefully we're going to talk about Bartholomew, Matthew, and Thaddeus this morning. So Bartholomew has another name. Remember what Bartholomew's other name is? You better remember it, Tad. No? Nathaniel. I was going to give Tad a hard time if he missed it. Yeah, the sons of thunder were John and James. But Bartholomew and Nathaniel are the same person. There's some that don't agree with that. I don't understand why they don't agree with that. I think it's pretty clear to me that Bartholomew and Nathaniel are the same. Nathaniel is the Hebrew name, and Bartholomew is the Aramaic name. So Nathaniel means God has given, and Bartholomew, which is Aramaic, it means son of Ptolemy. And the only reason why I'm bringing this up is that Ptolemy is a word that means furrows. And so it may be an indication that Bartholomew was the son of a farmer. And there's some other things we'll talk about in a minute that might give us the idea that Bartholomew came from a family of farmers, or maybe himself was a farmer. What do we know about Bartholomew? Well, we know pretty little about him. We do know where he's from. So let's go to John chapter 21. And we're just going to pick one verse out. Somebody read verse 20, or John chapter 21. Somebody read verse 2.
Simon Peter, Thomas called the twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and the two others of the disciples were together.
All right. So we just get one little snippet of information here about Bartholomew, and that's where he's from. And where is that? From Cana in Galilee. And, you know, that's interesting. Cana of Galilee has some connection back to Jesus. And what's the most significant connection of Cana of Galilee to Jesus? That's right. That's where Jesus performed his very first miracle. And so it sort of makes you wonder, was Bartholomew there? Well, if you read through John chapter 2, where that story is recounted to us at the end of that chapter, it seems to make us think that from that wedding, Jesus and his disciples move on. And so it gives us the idea that maybe the disciples were in fact there. It would probably make sense that Bartholomew was there, being from Cana. None of these towns were very big. So, you know, if there was a wedding there that people from the surrounding areas were invited to, it certainly makes sense that Bartholomew, being from the town, was there. But Cana itself was most likely a farming community. And that seems to be supported, or seems to support the idea that Bartholomew comes from a family of farmers. So I just think it's interesting to bring that up. We know that some of the apostles' occupations were fishermen. We're talking about Matthew. We know he was a tax collector. And we don't know much about the other apostles' occupations, but I think they were pretty ordinary guys. At least we certainly get that feeling. And so the fact that if it was in fact true that Bartholomew was a farmer, it seems to coincide with what else we know about the apostles. All right, there's one other thing that we know about Bartholomew, and that's his calling. So let's go to John chapter 1. And if someone gets there, let's read John 1, verse 43 through 51. All right, thanks, Mike. This is all we know about Bartholomew. And so here's the question, what do we learn about Bartholomew or Nathanael? What do we learn about him from this interaction with Jesus?
He had faith.
Okay.
Starting to develop.
Yeah. Was he easily persuaded, though? Yeah, it's interesting. It's hard to, for me at least, it's hard to determine whether or not he's easily persuaded. And I put that question here with no answer because I don't know the answer. You know, his first response was, you know, is there anything good that can come out of Cana or come out of Galilee? And then when Jesus talks to him, it's almost like he switches on a dime. You know, he just immediately becomes persuaded that he's the Son of God. And Jesus seems surprised by that. I don't know the answer. Is he someone who's easily persuaded, or is he somebody who, when he sees something that he knows to be true, he takes hold of it? I don't know what the right answer there is.
I wonder why he didn't just think he was a prophet or something. You know, I mean, prophets didn't think like that.
Yeah. It's possible we don't have the whole conversation here, but what do you think about his initial reaction to Philip? Yeah.
But I think that they, you know, in verse 45, they had been searching for Jesus also, and they knew about him. And it wasn't just like somebody came up to them and said, hey, the Son of God is here, and they didn't know anything about the Son of God, because they did. And so when he said, I saw you under the fig tree, it appears to me that that was a miracle.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
Nathanael realized at that point, you know, no one could have seen me under the fig tree but God.
Yeah. It's interesting, the thing that was, I don't know, miraculous about that was it, Jesus knew Bartholomew's response to Philip, even though it seems to have been a private conversation. Yet that's not the thing that seems to turn Bartholomew. It's not that he knew the conversation, it's that he saw him. And I think Jesus means exactly what he says there when he says, I saw you under the fig tree. I think I take that to mean that he literally did see him under the fig tree. You know, at first you might think that maybe Philip is being a little sarcastic, you know, here. Or not Philip, but Bartholomew is being a little sarcastic. Can anything good come out of out of Nazareth? Well, why would he say that?
Because he might have been quoting some of the Pharisees. This sounds almost verbatim what the Pharisees said, or one of the higher ups said.
Yeah. Yeah, what was the general opinion of Nazareth? Yeah, that's not where a king's going to come from, right? And yet, that is exactly what happened.
And here's another thought I had. I don't know how far they had to walk. He says, well, come and see. Well, I'm sure there's a lot of talk on the way. Mm-hmm. Philip probably was just filling his ears.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so in verse 51, it's interesting that Jesus tells him, "Most assuredly I say to you, hereafter you shall see heaven open and the angels ascending and descending upon the Son of Man." What do you think Jesus is referencing here? Yeah, but more specifically.
Yeah, it's the communication between God and man.
I wonder if it's Jesus' ascension in Acts chapter 1. I don't know that. We know the apostles were there for that to happen, but
that was only going one way, though. This is an
accident. Could they have seen the dove come down?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think the bigger picture there is that Bartholomew is going to see more significant things than this.
He said greater things than these. He said, "You think that was great, me seeing the victory, and it was over the hill."
Yeah.
Because I'm like Mike, I think it was his spirit that did that. Mm. It wasn't a natural sighting of Bartholomew.
Yeah.
Going back to Nazareth, I don't remember what was about Nazareth that it was bad.
Well, I'm not sure that I know anything specific. Yeah.
Well, Nazareth was made up of a lot. I mean, that had a lot of the influence going back to the captivity of Israel. And other nations were brought in. You know, the Samaritans and the mixture. These people just seem to be less educated and poor people, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Would this be considered Samaria?
Well, no, it's Galilee. So Samaria is like the middle section, and then Galilee is up above. But
I mean, they were both considered inferior, though, right?
Yes.
Yeah. People living in Judea looked down on people who were from Samaria and Galilee.
Yeah. There's still a lot of that north and south stuff happening there, that the northern tribes are all taken away and the southern tribes, well, they return, and there still is that perception that the region around Jerusalem and Judea, that they're better than the Samaritans, but Galileans fall in the same way as well.
Just geographically, they were farther from the epicenter of the law, the teaching, the universities. Probably no different than how people on the coast think about us.
Yeah, there's still some of that too. All right, we don't have a whole lot of information after the Bible about Bartholomew that I find to be very convincing. There was we talked that Philip and Bartholomew probably traveled together. There's a 4th century writing that says that Philip, we talked about this in talking about Philip, a 4th century writing that talks about Philip and him dying, that he was crucified. That same writing seems to indicate that Bartholomew was also crucified with Philip, but while on the cross, Philip was preaching and the city leaders were convinced to let Bartholomew go. There's some less credible writings that indicate that Bartholomew traveled to India and was eventually killed there. If you read Fox's Book of Martyrs, it'll tell you that Bartholomew was skinned alive, but I'm not exactly sure how credible that is. All right, let's move on to Matthew. What do we know about Matthew? All right, he was a tax collector. What else do we know about Matthew?
It's called Levi,
which gives us a hint of that we probably think he's from the tribe of Levi. Maybe. It's possible. What else do we know?
He probably had some money because, and I'm not saying this is true of Matthew, but it was true of most of the tax collectors, was that their salary just came from whatever they stole from the people.
Yeah. Yeah, let's just talk about Matthew being a tax collector first, because that seems to be a pretty significant part of his life. Unlike some of the other apostles, we read of the calling of Matthew in three of the four Gospels, which is really more than some of the others. Let's look at Matthew's own account of it, Matthew chapter 9. Okay, right, yeah. He wrote one of the Gospels. That was another one that I thought would be picked up on pretty quickly. There's one other thing we know about Matthew that is kind of obscure. All right, so Matthew chapter 9, verses 9 through 13. As Jesus passed on from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax office. And he said to him, "Follow me." So he arose and followed him. Now it happened as Jesus sat at the table in the house that behold, many tax collectors and sinners came and sat down with him and his disciples. And when the Pharisees saw it, they said to his disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" When Jesus heard that, he said to them, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. But go and learn from what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice, for I did not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance." All right. In the listing of the apostles in Matthew, Matthew is always listed as being a tax collector. Matthew is listed as being a tax collector, but only in the listing in Matthew. Now, there's four listings of the apostles, but Matthew in his own gospel identifies himself as a tax collector in Matthew chapter 10. Mike mentioned this just a little bit, but what was the general opinion of tax collectors of the day?
They were hated.
They were hated for two reasons. And what were those two reasons? Mike kind of mentioned one, and that was what?
Kind of like traitors because they were working for Rome.
Okay, that's the second reason. The second reason is that they were viewed as extensions of the Roman government, and so because of that, they were hated. But then the other reason why they were hated was why?
Greed.
That's right. It appears as though the tax collectors got their salary by what additional money they could get from the people they were collecting taxes from. So they were generally viewed as being greedy. And they were synonymous with sinners. And you can see that from what the Pharisees say about Jesus eating with tax collectors. He just basically says tax collectors and sinners, as if tax collectors and sinners are synonymous terms. So, were all tax collectors bad?
No, because you had the one, that Zacchaeus, he was like, "I'm going to give everything back that I ever," all right? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So, Matthew is a tax collector. Now, there's some people who think that Matthew may have been like all the other tax collectors, that he was a Roman sympathizer, that he was was greedy. Lots of people that thought that. I don't know that we have any indication that that's the case. And we know that some tax collectors were good people, and the example of that is Zacchaeus. In Luke chapter 19, verse 8, Zacchaeus speaking about himself to Jesus. Now, could Zacchaeus be fudging the truth? Maybe. But I don't get that impression. This is what Zacchaeus says. Then Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, "Look, Lord, I give half of my goods to the poor, and if I have taken anything from anyone by false accusation, I restore fourfold." So was Zacchaeus a greedy tax collector? No. It seems as though Zacchaeus was a very generous person. He gave goods to the poor. If he extorted money from people, he returned it fourfold. So while they had a reputation for being bad, they weren't always bad, or at least that's the indication that I get. Now, this is an interesting point. The apostles were a diverse group of people. Matthew was a tax collector, which generally was viewed as being a Roman sympathizer. So who would that have not sat well with amongst the other apostles? Judas, maybe.
Simon the Zealot.
Simon the Zealot is who I was thinking. And why is that? We haven't talked about Simon the Zealot, but what's a zealot? That's right. sort of the other end of the spectrum. Now, do we know that Matthew was a sympathizer of Rome? No, but most tax collectors were viewed that way. But this is just a perfect example of how two people could work together and be on total opposite ends of the spectrum. And we can learn from that. I mean, there's a lot of opinions of things that don't matter that we don't share in the church, and it's okay for us to not have the same opinion. We can still work together for the Lord because those things don't matter. You know, whether you like the Cardinals or the Royals or whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, those things in the grand scheme of things, we can all still work for the Lord. All right. So we mentioned that Matthew was also named Levi. And this may mean that he's from the tribe of Levi, but maybe it doesn't. I tend to think that it does, but I don't know why I think that. We get that from Mark chapter 2, and it's from here that we learn something else about Matthew. And so this is Mark's recounting of Matthew being called. And somebody read verse 13 through 17.
Scribes and Pharisees saw him eating with the tax collectors and sinners. They said to his disciples, "How is it that he eats and drinks with tax collectors and sinners?" When Jesus heard it, he said to them, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. I did not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance."
All right, so a lot of it is the same, but we learn two additional things about Matthew. Here he's called Levi, but what else do we know? What two things do we learn now from Mark's recounting of this story?
Son of Alphaeus,
yeah. So is he related to James? Well, there's some people that think that. I tend to think that he's not. I think that this is a different Alphaeus. And the reason I think that is that the other brothers are always paired together, right? Peter and Andrew are always paired together. James and John are always paired together. But Matthew was not paired with James, the son of Alphaeus. Matthew is always paired with Thomas, and James, the son of Alphaeus, is paired with Thaddeus and Simon the Zealot. And that's because Judas didn't get the same partner. And Alphaeus very well may have been a common first century name. I tried to find some information about how common Alphaeus was, but I couldn't find that. I just don't think they're related, just because if they were, why did Jesus separate those two brothers when he kept the other two brothers paired together? So we know his father's name is Alphaeus. One other thing that we learn. Well, when Jesus calls Matthew and they have this big party of tax collectors, this feast where the tax collectors come, where do they go?
To his house,
Matthew's house. If we read Matthew's account of this, we wouldn't know that it was Matthew's home that they met in. But here Mark tells us that Matthew was a homeowner. And so it gives you the idea that he or his family was, in all likelihood, middle class, maybe wealthy. We don't know. But as a tax collector, he was probably fairly well off. Most of the tax collectors were fluent in both Greek and Hebrew. And because he has an Aramaic name, I'm confusing that. He was probably fluent in both Greek and Hebrew. And so that may have been an indication that he was educated in some way. Again, all that's speculation, but one other interesting thing is that Matthew appears to be well-respected amongst the tax collectors because they all come to his home. Now, if you don't respect somebody and they have a feast, are you going to go to their home? Probably not. And so it seems as though Matthew has a good reputation amongst the tax collectors. Yeah, publican is the old King James word for that. Yeah.
Why that was, but it was basically because they did that out in the public at the gate.
Yeah. You paid your taxes. Yep.
Kind of like a toll taker.
Yeah. I can tell you that at work we have folks who collect money. They register patients for their treatments and then they collect money. That's like the worst job ever. I just don't like asking. I don't know what it is, but you know, here hitting people up for money your whole life, that just doesn't seem like a very attractive job, but some people want to do it. All right, Matthew is probably from the town of Capernaum. Both the books of Matthew and Mark record the events that we've just read happening in Capernaum, or events just prior to this happening to Capernaum. And so it very well may be that Matthew lived in Capernaum. We don't know that, but Mark chapter 2, verse 1, and Matthew chapter 9, verse 1, talk about events preceding Matthew's calling happening in Capernaum, so maybe Matthew lived in Capernaum. But I want you to notice how the story of Matthew's calling begins. In Matthew chapter 9, verse 9, as Jesus passed by from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax office, and he said to him, "Follow me." So he arose and followed him. Mark chapter 2, verse 13 and 14. Then he went out again by the sea, and all the multitude came to him, and he taught them. As he passed by, he saw Matthew, the son of Alphaeus, sitting in the tax office, and said to him, "Follow me." So he arose and followed him. It's interesting that we get the same picture that we get with other apostles, that Jesus seems like he's just going from one place to another. He sees Matthew, says, "Matthew, follow me," and Matthew leaves his job to follow after Jesus. And it very well may be that this party, this feast that Matthew has, is I'm going to just have a going away party for myself, and I'm not going to be a tax collector anymore. I don't know that to be true. It's somewhat speculation. All right, the last thing that Eric said that we know about Matthew is that he was an author of the gospel. So, let me ask you a question. Why do we think that Matthew wrote the gospel that bears his name?
Well, I guess the easiest one is the level of detail that we find in the book about Jesus' life would make sense that somebody who spent a lot of time with him would be able to have this account.
Yeah. And the detail is the issue there. You know, lots of folks look at the way it's written and translate it to Matthew's life, and it likely could have been written by a person of his education. Again, because people speculate that he was an educated person, but the text of the book does not contain the author's name, Tad. Okay, and that's correct. So there was this man who wrote in the 100s. His name was Papias, P-A-P-I-A-S, and his writings are lost, but he's quoted by Eusebius. So Eusebius in the 2nd and 3rd century, he quotes this man, and so we have Eusebius quoting writings that are now gone, stating that this gospel was written by Matthew. And so the title to the book, The Gospel According to Matthew, that was added in the early 2nd century. So we can be fairly confident that the book was written by Matthew. But in the end, it doesn't matter, because who wrote the book really? The Holy Spirit did. That's right. Okay, some non-biblical information about Matthew. Both Irenaeus and Clement of Alexandria claim that Matthew preached the gospel to the Jewish community in Judea before moving on to other countries. Both those guys, Irenaeus and Clement, they lived in the mid to late 2nd century. So that seems to be pretty accurate information from them. All right, any other comments about Matthew? Okay.
Where else does he show up besides his book? I mean, you just have his calling.
And then that's it. And he's mentioned in the listings of apostles, but that's it. That's it. There's no stories or anything that include Matthew. Eddie?
When Jesus said, come follow me, why would they just jump up and follow him?
Yeah.
Because that whenever Jesus was first announced, I guess, we have found the Christ. Did all of them know this?
Yeah, there's the most likely explanation is that these were all followers of John, and that they had had some interactions with Jesus prior to him calling them. But
and John told them that this was the Messiah.
Yeah. Okay. Tad?
I had a comment on that too. I think some of these instances are significantly abbreviated versions of what actually happened.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, and I agree. These are likely abbreviated stories.
Yeah, I agree with that too. That's what I was going to say, because, you know, even if somebody stood up and, you know, maybe he did start walking after him immediately, but, you know, you would have conversation with him. You'd be talking with him, and, you know, very quickly they could see and understand who he was. But I think this is definitely an abbreviated version.
The one thing for sure we know is that Jesus had this aura about him that was totally unlike any other human being.
That's right. Yeah, Matthew, the end of the Sermon on the Mount, gives us that picture very clearly. He taught like nobody else.
Well, he could also choose when he wanted that personality, or when he wanted that aura, as Bob put it, to probably shine forward, and probably whatever he was calling the 12, it was stronger at that time than any other. I don't know.
Okay. All right, I do want to talk about Thaddeus for the next 5 minutes, and we'll get him covered. All right, well, what do we know about Thaddeus? Well, Thaddeus is the apostle of many names, because Thaddeus has three different names listed in the New Testament. In Matthew chapter 10, in the listing of the apostles, verses 2 through 4. Now the names of the 12 apostles are these: first Simon, who is called Peter, and Andrew his brother, James the son of Zebedee, and John his brother, Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas and Matthew the tax collector, James the son of Alphaeus, and Lebbeus, whose surname was Thaddeus, Simon the Canaanite, and Judas Iscariot, who also betrayed him. So here we learn that Thaddeus has two names, right? Thaddeus is his surname, but what was his other name? Lebbeus, right? Strange name. Lebbeus means a man of heart. And then in Luke chapter 6, we learn that Thaddeus has another name. Again, it's the listing of the apostles. Beginning Luke 6 and 14, Simon, whose name was also Peter, and Andrew, his brother, James and John, Philip and Bartholomew, Matthew and Thomas, James the son of Alphaeus, and Simon called the Zealot, Judas, the son of James, and Judas Iscariot, who also became a traitor. Now, you didn't hear Thaddeus or Lebbeus there, but you kind of, process of elimination, can realize that Thaddeus' other name was Judas, and that his father was James. So, here we have Thaddeus having three names: Thaddeus, Lebbeus, and Judas, and his father's name was James. There's really only one story in the New Testament that includes Thaddeus, and that's in John chapter 14. John chapter 14, verses 19 through 24. So it's in the book of Luke that he's called Judas. And here in the book of John, he's also called Judas. And again, this has led to some confusion. Some folks think that maybe Thaddeus and Lebbeus are the same person, but Judas is not the same person as Thaddeus and Levius. I don't know how that can be. Jesus called 12 apostles and these are them. Mike? Well, it's a derivative of Judah. It's the, what is it, the Aramaic or the Greek version of Judah.
That was one of the most common.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There were lots of people named Judas. Judas is at this time was going to be a very, very common name. So, not surprising that Judas would be, you know, that one of the other apostles would have a name named Judas. All right, John 14. Somebody read 19 through 24 for us.
John
14, verses 19 through 24.
After a little while, the world will no longer see me, but you will see me because I live. You will live also. In that day, you will know that I am in my Father, and you in me, and I in you. He who has my commandments and keeps them is the one who loves me. And he who loves me will be loved by my Father. And I will love him and will disclose myself to him. Through 24, you said?
Yeah.
Judas, not Iscariot, said to him, Lord, what then has happened that you are going to disclose yourself to us and not to the world? Jesus answered and said to him, if anyone loves me, he will keep my word, and my Father will love him, and we will come to him and make our abode with him. He who does not love me does not keep my words, and the word which you hear is not mine, but the Father's who sent me.
All right. I think it's interesting here that John calls Thaddeus Judas, but then makes a point to distinguish him from the other more well-known Judas. That here, Thaddeus asked this question, Lord, how is it that you will manifest yourself to us and not to the world? This is just one of those interesting questions of the apostles that, you know, hindsight's 20/20. In retrospect, when we look at this question that Thaddeus asked, you're like, why would you ask this question? The apostles asked those kinds of questions. Like, well, you don't understand the answer to that. But they were living in it in the moment, and they just couldn't see past that moment to know how Jesus would manifest himself to them, but not to the world. Eddie?
Could it be because he taught in parables?
Oh, most certainly, yeah. Yeah. You know, the teaching of the parables were so that, in some way, so that the people who wanted to see could see, but the people who didn't want to, that they would be confused by it. Yeah.
What's the probability that he wrote Judas?
Yeah, so just as likely as any of the other people named Jude in the Bible. So if I remember right, Jude, is it Jude that says he's the brother of James, or is it James that says he's the brother of Jude? Yeah. Okay. Jude says he's the brother of James. We know that Thaddeus' father's name is James. And there was a lot of naming of your children, you know, after yourself. So it's possible that if Thaddeus' father's name was James, that he would also have a brother named James. But I think most people look at the book of Jude and think of it as the brother of Jesus, but I mean it's all speculation. There are no early writings about Thaddeus that are reliable. So we managed to make it through several of the apostles. The ones that we didn't get to touch on are Thomas, Simon, and Matthias. So I may try. This is technically supposed to be my last week, but I may see about teaching next week. I don't know. I need to talk to Mike about that. But we've got those three to cover, and then of course Peter and Paul. But there's so much information on them that I was intentionally leaving them for last. Okay, let's take a short break, and then we'll reconvene.